Hi there, it's Amy Guth, host on WGN Radio.
And I'm Rex Hupke, a terrible columnist with the Chicago Tribune.
Discourse is at an all-time high in this country, and we're very civilized, and we're thoughtfully...
Shut up, Amy!
Like I said, we're thoughtfully having conversations.
Stop it!
Shut it! Shut up right now!
For God's sake!
I swear to God, I will go over
you.
Punch you! You! So, in a civilized way, let us take a look at what's happening in political headlines right now. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Guth and Hupke on Politics. I'm Amy Guth. That there is Rex Hupke. How's it going? How are you feeling today? How's everyone feeling today? Let's use some I feel statements about how we're all feeling about things. So the yesterday was election day in Illinois. Good times. what time of day did you vote, Hupke?
Late afternoon, actually, because we kind of had to, my wife and I sort of, she had the morning, and because our kids were off school, you know, it's a no school day, because they have so many, like so many of the schools are polling places, and they don't want random weirdo voters walking around while the kids are in school.
My polling place is a bar.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was possible.
Well, so I had questions for them, and this is what I learned, that, because I was like, so how can you, how can it be a polling place for people 18 to 21 or 18 to 20? Like, how can that person enter a bar? So what it is they use a side kind of back delivery entrance that's like a delivery / emergency exit for their party room and blocked off the door that connects the party room from the bar.
So still sounds dodgy.
So I go up and I open the bar door and it's locked. And I was like, well, damn. It's supposed to be like I'm barred from, because I'm always like looking for a reason to get mad and find something sketchy with election day.
Right.
Wow. Like one time I got it got really sideways and I had to like have a conversation with an election judge several years ago and it was really infuriating. So I'm on my guard and looking out for, I feel like it's my civic duty to be looking out for. You know,
I'm fucking
people.
Sinking again.
You're
here, by
sinking
the way.
It.
Sorry, not to interrupt.
Every
you,
week you're going. You,
this
your
is the second chair,
chair
I'm right now. Maybe it's trying to tell me something. Sorry.
I'll continue my election story.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
After these messages of Rex changing chairs, throwing jackets, things are happening. It's chaos. Are you happy now?
This one feels.
He was here. Here's the real thing of it: is that he was just feeling like threatened because his chair's lower than mine,
and he
was all like. You know,
classic patriarchy
under
move.
The influence of toxic masculinity in that moment, freaking out about, oh, my chair is broken. No, it's not broken. I'm just, my eye level is higher than yours is all.
Yes.
Anyway, so I'm on my guard in a polling place and the door's locked and this dude pops around the corner in a kind of shady way and he goes, you looking to vote? You better head down there. And I was like, what? So I'm basically like,
want to buy a vote?
Yeah, right. Like, I like enter through this back delivery entrance. It's all closed and unmarked, and there's a woman outside. She's like, "You're in the right spot." I'm like, "This is real shady right
that
now."
That is really weird. Yeah,
but then seriously. It was fine.
Well, that's good. You were able to vote.
I was able to vote.
How many times?
Repeatedly. No, just the one time. Although there was consternation because you know I like to over ask and I like to be very clear, and so. Two different people volunteered different sets of information to me.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, in a voting in a primary, you have to check a party affiliation, Republican, Democrat, nonpartisan, or green on that little, like,
right.
That second box, right? So another person there was confused and like, they were, like, the people at the polling place started just passing out information, saying information, but they were conflicting bits of information.
Uh-huh.
One person said, if you check nonpartisan, you only get the referenda ballot. The other person said, no, you get any ballot you want. You just need to register something. And then someone else was like, by the way, everybody, you only get a ballot if you check Republican or Democrat. So all of a sudden, everybody was like, whoa, shady. Hold up. So it got resolved. Everybody got to vote. Everything's fine. But I was like, can you make sure that... So I was like, do you have a supervisor here? Because I just want to make sure everybody's getting the same information.
Yeah.
So I think they thought I was like the secret shopper of voters to be like checking up on them. And then, you know.
Which you may have been. We still don't know.
I mean, I am reporting on what occurred. So that was some things that happened. And then, you know, did the civic duty, did the voting.
Yeah, and now we got us a pair of white, super rich white boys.
Yeah, that's a thing that happened.
Running for governor. Woo! $300 million.
It's a square off of the rich white male billionaire.
Multi-millionaire versus billionaire.
Oh, God.
In a honky off.
You can't say.
Pretty sure I can say that. Right? Why can't I say that?
I'm about to pass out right now. You just said honky off. Oh, my God. Well, that's going to be the supercut we're going to make.
Yeah, there you go.
Just you saying that.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, I've been called a traitor to my own race enough times already. I'm not real worried about any fallout from that. No, I just, I mean, I have a bad taste in my mouth right now when it comes to super rich white dudes.
Oh, sure.
Wine, and it isn't just, I'm talking about all of them. I'm not talking Republican versus Democrat. I mean, all of them. Like Weinstein, Trump, you know, the former owner of a certain newspaper company.
That may or may not rhyme with honk.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, then you got Pritzker, who's got money stashed, God knows where, who I don't particularly feel good about. And then you've got Rauner, who, you know, I definitely don't feel good about for a lot of different reasons, but also has money stashed in weird places and, you know, hasn't released all his tax returns and blah, 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 blah. And I'm sick of it. I mean, look, I am a white guy, but I don't particularly feel like super rich white guys with bazillions of dollars who are buying themselves political power is a good idea at all under any circumstances. I think we need some different voices.
Have you read much on the subject of the history of everything ever?
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. I realize that. But I feel like there's a when we should be heading in the direction.
Sure.
And when, frankly, it felt like we were heading in a direction of greater diversity and inclusiveness and that sort of thing, and valuing other voices more, as we should, it feels like we have taken a notable step back. Not in all phases, but in certain phases. In politics, for sure. And it's frustrating.
No, in many. But I think in business sectors and, like, in many ways, I think. But that's what happens, right? Like, just like they say, you know, if you're going to jump in and save a drowning person, make sure that you yourself are protected because they'll pull you under. And I think that's what's happening. Like, as the ground beneath the structures of power rumbles, the people in positions of power are trying to just grasp and pull things down with them.
Yeah, yeah. But that doesn't mean everything.
I can't believe you said honky off. I'm still laughing about honky off. We cannot call this episode worst honky ever.
Oh, sure. Sure we can.
We
can. Although that is a difficult question to answer.
I'm going to let you email management and say, is it cool if we call this episode? Ah, good times. Anyway, as you were saying.
Yeah, no, there are, you know, there are things. It is not all gloom and doom necessarily, you know. This is totally off the subject.
I mean, it's mostly gloom and doom, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, but there's signs of hope. And one thing that was a surprising and I think absolutely delightful sign of hope was last week tonight, the John Oliver Show put out. So Mike Pence has been planning to put out a children's book about his bunny, whose name is Marlon Bundo. And it was coming out, I think, you know, like sometime this week it came out. The geniuses at Last Week Tonight made a book about Marlon Bundo in which Marlon Bundo is a gay rabbit who finds love. And it is, it was written by one of the writers on the show, Jill Twiss, who I just sort of tangentially know on Twitter. And it's wonderful. And it's this it's this great message. And of course it's outselling Pence's book like by a lot, and that just I just find that great. And frankly, and you know, the one thing that I've personally have fallen back on a lot during a lot of this time of doom and gloom and general frustration is that I still very much believe which line of thinking, which attitude, which beliefs are going to win out. And I think you see that in even in certain respects from you know, companies. If you look at, like, you know, the way companies advertise and that sort of thing, the people that they're trying to target, you know, you don't see anti-gay ads. You don't see companies and corporations running away from being inclusive and perhaps in their own ranks you do, and that's not good. But I mean, I'm talking about in the public face that they put forth. And then you see something as simple as a silly, funny children's book that a comedy show puts together real fast to undercut the Vice President of the United States in a stupid bunny book. And you think, okay, I think I know who's going to win here when it all comes down. You know, and it isn't going to be Mike Pence and his goddamn rabbit. It's going to be... It's going to be...
You are... Someone just shook your soda today, Hupke.
So, no, but I think that, you know, I just think that's a good thing, you know? I mean, and I know it isn't... This isn't specifically about politics, and I know that a book doing well versus another book is not doing away with all of the myriad problems that we're facing and stuff, but it is just another reminder of where people, most people, really are, you know? And most people, I believe, are good people and want to make, you know, this world better for everyone and more inclusive and embrace that. Most people favor a funny gay rabbit.
I just was going to sit here and look at you until you said that.
Yeah, there you go.
Fair enough.
So I that made me feel a little hopeful. So, you know, sue me.
Why would I sue you? Why would I do that? I'm going to sue him for being hopeful.
I didn't mean you. I meant the audience, you know, people in general.
But, you know, that expression reminds me. It's like, I feel like there's the person that says, sue me, is the same one that's like, big whoop. So we're going to bring both of those back. We're going to say those all the time.
Big whoop. Yeah, I like that. That's a good one.
Like, I have sort of like an adopted great aunt character in my life, you know, and she's always like, big whoop. Sue me.
How do you spell whoop? W-U-P or
W-H-O-O-P. Whoop.
Oh, big. That's more like whoop. I always think of whoop as W.
No, W-O-O-P is whoop.
Oh, okay.
Why do you need to know how to spell
I don't know.
That?
I just really wanted to. As soon as you said that, I was like, big W-H-U-P, W.
I think in pictures, you think in words.
Yeah.
And that's where the divide is with us. That's exactly. The issue. Yeah. Okay, so let's switch to something else immediately. I would like to discuss Facebook.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Because I've been bitching and moaning about Facebook for a couple of years now. I don't do a ton on it. I basically only keep Facebook around for a couple of groups that I'm in. One in particular that is a lifeline of people.
Facebook Haters of America?
Yes, that's who. So right now, there's a lot of people... You know, delete Facebook is trending. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of discussion. I think this is another example of one of those stories, though, that got so big so fast, people are a little lost on the what.
Yeah.
And so they're just kind of like, yeah, Facebook, because Zucker bad. Sure. Like, I don't think people know the situation because it got like big and complex quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say... Most people who work in a deep tech sector or maybe did around, say, 2012 mm-hmm. or a little before probably already had these concerns and have zero surprise right now of many of the data breach in particular concerns. So I know several people that live tweeted their blowing up of their Facebook account years ago. I don't think anything is necessarily worth live tweeting to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like some things, but not really. Not like, I'm unfriending people and live tweeting. But like, shut up. Just do it. Just shut up. Just do it. But these concerns have swirled a long time. But now they seem to be up in a much bigger and more grotesque and powerful way. And I'm concerned that a lot of people are talking without, like, what is the problem exactly? So it's one of those times I feel like I want to go out into the world and interview just a ton of random people and say, what's your issue with Facebook right now?
Uh-huh.
And they'll be like, because it's bad.
And then you can actually them.
Actually. I do not actually, people. That is rude and not helpful.
You could take back actually.
I don't want it. I don't want to reclaim it. I don't want it. I don't care. I don't like it.
I'm going to keep it then.
Well, as a white man, I think you should. It's an important tool that you fellas have in your arsenal.
It really is.
Eesh. You missed it. I set you up
I
for
know.
That.
I wasn't
like,
going to
well,
go. I'm too.
Actually, it's not a tool. It's a language device.
Yeah, I'm too.
Fucker.
Too classy for that.
Of course. Anyway, so what are you feeling about Facebook right now, Huffy?
It's confusing as hell. And I have sort of tried to fully understand it, and I still honestly don't fully understand. I would be lying if I said I fully understood exactly how this all, the data acquisition, the you know, harvesting. I like how they use the word harvesting of personal information because it makes me think about harvesting organs. But so I think this is the way I've looked at, and this is probably very dumb, I admit, but the way I've looked at internet privacy is that it feels like a losing battle.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think, while I want that battle to continue, and I want, for example, what has happened here with Facebook clearly is very bad. What's happening with, or has happened with Cambridge Analytica is way worse. I mean the bad that Facebook allowed this to happen, but what Cambridge Analytica did to really weaponize the data that they had to assist not just Trump, but other elections in other countries and here and this, that, and the other thing.
And you know, sidebar, that's the name of the data analytics firm.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have been using it like a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, or like the name of the scandal.
Oh, right.
Like
yeah.
This whole Cambridge thing.
Right.
It's not Watergate.
No,
it's the name of the, it's a company, and it's the name of the data analytics firm that used that, that is known for many things, but one of them is aiding Trump's campaign and some Brexit stuff.
Mm-hmm. And helping to very, very, very strategically target people.
Yes.
With online ads, stories, you know, often fake stories.
With the help of mental health professionals.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So anyway, yes, that's a good clarification. Thank you. But I think, to me, the bigger concern for the average person is to start learning to be cautious in what you are consuming, because I think everybody to some degree is being targeted, whether it's from companies to, or it's from political campaigns or what have you. So I think that blaming, it never should have happened, but at the same time, putting all the blame on Facebook and even on Cambridge Analytica is taking away some of the responsibility to the people who idiotically fell for all of this crap.
Like, well, but if something is specifically, I mean, yes, idiotically is fair, but also it's hard to say that, because if you've got PhDs that are there, you know, hired to manipulate other human beings. I mean, retail does that. Retail is specifically designed to manipulate us into buying more.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're a dumbass if you walk into Target for a paper towels and you leave with $200 worth of crap.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you're stupid. It's just you've been played like a bitch, right? Like, that's what's happened.
Yeah.
So it's that. It's like your humanness made you walk into the trap based on predictive behavior.
Yes. Okay, fine. But people still need to learn. I mean, if people are not willing to acknowledge now that they got played.
Well, that's a different thing.
So
yeah.
that's what I'm trying to say. So I would like to see focus on the malfeasance that has gone on here, but also focus on the responsibility that anybody who exists online has to recognize what can happen. But instead, thanks to fake news and yada yada, most of the people impacted by this are not going to believe it.
No.
And they're going to think, man, that never happened to me. And they'll point to stories that were targeted specifically to them that show why it didn't happen to them. So it's hard. It's a real mess. But, the idea of deleting Facebook is, you know, fine if that's what you want to do, but there's going to be another, you kill Facebook and something else pops up. Plus, we already have a lot of other things, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, you know, you name it.
But much different behavior. I think, you know, Snapchat, I want to put in its own category, because Snapchat made a division early on from the start saying, this is user-generated crap,
mm-hmm.
true or not, for fun or not. This side of it is the news stuff, and we are hiring journalists, and they've never let those two things bleed into each other.
I did not know that. So okay.
So, I always want to put that to Snapchat that,
I don't use Snapchat, really. So.
I've got my issues with Snapchat. Like, their filters make you look whiter, and they lighten your eyes, so
mm-hmm.
clearly that's not a thing that's, right? Like, that's clearly playing into a very white definition of beauty,
yeah.
Which is pretty fucked up and all that. But Snapchat filters aside, just as a data place, like, I don't think people are going there to get their news per se, because I think more people are relying on Twitter and Facebook. But, like, I want to always mention kudos to Snapchat, because they made that decision earlier of, you know, these two things are not going to meet. We're not going to blend news from professional journalists and user data. They're always going to, or user generated content. They're, right. They're always going to be in separate houses, and they've kept that.
That's so, really good. Yeah, yeah, I didn't know that. Okay, cool. Well, that's good. And the, you know, I mean, those are the kind of steps that need to be made. I think that perhaps instead of deleting Facebook, it's a matter of pressuring Facebook to do things to, you know, better create those clearer walls and stuff. I don't know how you do that. And maybe Facebook has to go away and something else has to replace it in order for that to happen. I don't know, but I have no allegiance to Facebook. I don't even really, I'm the same way. I use it.
Sparingly.
It's hooked to my Twitter. My tweets go up on Facebook, and I have a page for my columns, and that's it.
Here's some reading. I would say read a book called Terms of Service by Jacob Silverman, which is really good. I've interviewed him, and he's a very smart guy, and he has a lot to say on that subject about the way we think about privacy is actually a little short-sighted, that there's a much deeper implication about manipulation of our behavior and our feelings and well-being that, and our actions, that I think is really important to note, that he talks about a lot. And then there's another book by B.J. Mendelsohn called Privacy and How to Get It Back. And here's an author who was like, I think it's a farce. Like, there's no way that any of us have privacy, so I'm going to live completely openly. Like, in that, I also interviewed him, and in that interview, he gave his phone number on the air. And he was like, you can text me, and I will send you a copy of this, you know, guide that I have, this thing. Like, he is so open with it. He's like, with the rare exception, it's, you know, pretty much no one's screwing with me, because there's some degree of safety in hiding in plain sight. So those, I would say, are really interesting.
That is interesting.
But I also think it's important to take a look at how the tech giants have fared in the European court system about things that have never been brought up here, because, I mean, there's a lot of political power out of Silicon Valley. There's a lot of money, a ton of it, that's funding a lot of shit that probably grants them a great deal of privilege and some degree of unofficial lobbyist statute, you know, status rather. And that is not granted in Europe. And so you see European Union courts that have treated Facebook and data and privacy, even Google search results, very differently. Mm-hmm. If you Google, I'm trying to, like, where's a good place to start? Google, like, the EU court and Facebook data privacy, start there. There was, I think it was in, there was a story in Dublin a couple of years ago. There was French newsrooms, like French journalists, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, really had a philosophical moment with Google, even, and just what does it mean to parse news content and how it's distributed and how is Google distributing it evenly and fairly. So I think it's been so the more you dig into how things play out in other parts of the world, particularly in Europe, you know, the more it starts to show you how enslaved to the tech giants we are here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, and also, and I feel like we have more people who are going to scream, you're trying to regulate, blah, blah, you know, and which always seems to trump common sense. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could make a suggestion for regulating, yes, use that word, regulating the way certain things, you know, happen, and everybody's like, brr.
They're,
it's like
how?
When you,
what's, how are that? They?
Brr. Yeah. I'm a real piece of work today. Yeah, I mean, it's like the same. You get into these arguments of, like, well, you know, you can't say that you don't want to hear from, that we shouldn't publish something from a hate group, because that's silencing. It's a, no. Like, you know,
that hate group wants to stomp me out and eliminate all my people. So, no, I'm fine with that.
Right. Exactly. I think I don't know if that's a uniquely kind of American reaction where they just want everything to be sort of free flowing. I don't know if, like you said, I'm sure a lot of it is the Silicon Valley factor and the money that's involved. But it is bad, you know, and we're starting to really see the damage that comes from this.
Yeah, and I think that narrative exists in a lot of places, right? Like when we talk about even, you know, a subject near to my heart, which is online harassment and abuse, immediately it's like, well, I have the right to say whatever I want online. Indeed, you do, but there are consequences to any action. And that's where it always stops. When, as soon as, I feel like in this country, as soon as we say rights, everything stops.
Right.
And we never make it all the way through. We don't follow through on that cycle and get it to the point of consequences and accountability.
Right. Same with guns. Same with, I mean.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah, true. And it's really, it's getting, it's becoming increasingly frustrating because people on the left and the right, I mean, I should have said that, sorry, right and the left, because I think the default is to think it's sort of a conservative thing. But it actually, you get a hell of a lot of people on the left who are super squawky about anything, you know, that is going to, like, limit quote-unquote free speech, which, you know, and again, this, the other thing that drives me bananas is the use of the First Amendment. To say you're violating someone's First Amendment rights by not letting them tweet something on a private company's service. You know what I mean? It's like that's not, no, that isn't what the First Amendment says or ever said. Stop it. You know, it just drives me absolutely bananas because that gets rolled out as like this automatic excuse as soon as you start saying like, hey, I think it's bad that Twitter's letting a bunch of Nazis, you know, tell people that horrible, you know, say horrible anti-Semitic things on here. You're like, whoa, hey man, First Amendment, dude. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. It's not the First Amendment, okay? Like, this is, they're welcome to go. They can go stand on a damn street corner and scream it if they want to, but, and the government can't stop them. I could come and punch them, but the idea that the way that First Amendment map gets thrown around is so annoying. And it, and that in and of itself is just taking us to such a worse place, you know?
Speaking of Nazis, can I read my very favorite lead today?
Yes, and that's a great segue, by the way.
I am what you call a radio professional, and I am very good. Speaking of Nazis, this is a New York Times lead that is very excellent. And by excellent, I mean fucking terrible. But here we are. Arthur Jones, a Holocaust denier described as a Nazi by the Illinois Republican Party, won the Republican primary on Tuesday in the state's 3rd congressional district, a heavily Democratic district that includes part of Chicago and its suburbs, according to the Associated Press. Oh, Arthur Jones.
I saw that headline. Described as. I was like, no, I think you can.
No, literal Nazi.
Right. I think you can pretty much. I've read the stuff on his website. I think you're good to go with just Nazi.
Yeah, Nazi's probably accurate enough. We can go with that.
And if you're not, and if you don't, if you're not comfortable with that for some reason, you could certainly say, you know, Holocaust denier, anti-Semite, you know, racist. I mean, just any of those things would be 100% defensible based on the evidence that he has provided.
Right. So, yeah. Okay, so but that raises an interesting question, though. As a purely discussion, let's start by saying, I don't like Nazis.
I second that.
Let's agree on that to begin. Yes. So we're clear, and the record is set here. Nazis equal bad.
Not a pro-Nazi in the room right now, let me tell you.
Yeah. That said, let's take the kind of the heat out of that for a minute and just look at it from a from the standpoint of accuracy in reporting. There is a lot of conversation around you know, why hasn't this outlet just, why not say this person is a Nazi? Why not say this person is a racist? When it comes to ideological identification and identities such as Nazi and racist and things like that, where do you personally think that, like, how do you quantify that? How do you fact check that? How do you say, I mean, at what point in your mind is it okay to say Nazi?
When a political candidate has a screed about the Holocaust being a made-up thing on his website, along with a history of anti-Semitism and participation in Nazi events.
Sure. No.
Then I think
I know these, like,
I think, yeah, that I think is
I'm not trying
solid.
To like be no,
no,
patronizing.
No, no.
Like,
oh, no,
I really
no, no,
am
no,
asking
not.
Because
no, no. No, and it's a good question because I mean, look, there are people are quick to throw that term around.
Yes. And
that I do think is
that's
bad.
Exactly where I'm going with that. Like and I think there is danger in like layers of it.
Right.
Because we have talked about people who don't think they're racist. They're like, I'm prejudiced, but I'm racist. Like, yeah. I think that's one and the same, but someone else might not. So where is the accuracy? Like, where is the truth with a capital T of what you can describe that person in a news story accurately?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, this is, I think this GOP candidate who
I'm also, for the record, not disputing that Arthur Jones is a Nazi.
Right. No, I know. But it's a really good point. And I think this is like one of the very, in America, thank God, this is one of the very rare moments when you can 100% yeah. say Nazi.
Totally.
this guy is a Nazi.
I agree.
But I don't, I actually, you know, I mean, you talk about, I think it gets harder when you talk, even people like, you know, Richard Spencer, who, you know, super Nazi, but... You know, I mean, you could even get into the weeds.
I'm not that on the fence with Richard Spencer.
You could be, well, maybe not. I guess not. But I mean, I'm just trying to throw another.
But you see where I'm going with this, right?
I mean,
I'm like using a volatile example.
Right. Yes. Exactly. And I think that, I mean, there could be arguments made about okay, what constitutes an? I mean, Nazi was like, you know, really a political,
a formal affiliation.
Right. A formal
right.
affiliation.
Right. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. Right. At what point is someone like? I think the issue is there's not perhaps a standard, widely recognized definition
right.
of Nazi. Like, yeah. let's take this down to a micro level. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's never, it's always like, there's always a story in here and there about like some kind of, usually like somebody in the entertainment industry who's like maybe had like one line in a movie or like is an Instagram model or, you know, something like that. But it's not like a supermodel or right. not like a big recognizable actor who it'll be, you know, who somewhere a news story will refer to as like model so-and-so or actor so-and-so. And people sometimes jump on that. And it, yeah. so at what point is it when you make a living as a model or an actor that you're allowed to be called actor? It's like if you have a day job, like mm-hmm. I got 9 jobs. Does that mean I can't say radio host because it's not my primary
right.
source of income? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I'm intentionally trying to use a not loaded example.
Yeah,
right.
No, I see.
So at what point can you call somebody a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's take that back up to like clearly we know who we don't have much hesitation when we have other party affiliation when we call somebody like a Democrat, a Republican, a socialist, whatever. Like we don't hesitate much because we know the ideals, the ideological stuff that goes with each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I think recognize that there is a spectrum within each.
Right.
So, because Nazi, this is a long walk for a short drink of water, but I'm getting there. But like, because Nazi started as a political affiliation and a formal thing, and now it's not necessarily that way, why is it so difficult to accurately and irrefutably call somebody a Nazi and do you think that it would be useful for us industry-wide to start having a conversation of, like, at what point can we say racist and Nazi and it's totally accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nazi just is fundamentally more difficult, again, because of its history, because of its association to, like, a sort of a political party, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. And, well, not I guess, it was. I mean, so to me, the better way to do it is to just use, I mean, racist... anti-Semite, Holocaust denier, which is kind of one and the same. And
Again, the New York Times, their lead was Arthur Jones, a Holocaust denier described as a Nazi by the Illinois Republican Party. That's how it opens.
Yeah, maybe that's why they hedged. because of the difficulty.
That's the thing. It's hedging, yeah. And it's like
I would just leave it out personally. I mean, I don't think it's necessary to me calling someone a Nazi versus calling someone a white supremacist, an anti-Semite, even a Holocaust denier.
You'd leave that out?
Maybe. I'm speculating. I don't like there is the hedge. So I feel like if you have to hedge, if you have to hang,
do it or don't.
If you have to hang Nazi on, you know, the GOP party.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then just don't. Because you can call him, there's plenty of things you can accurately call him that are reprehensible. You know, I mean, I don't think, I mean, I, you know, I mean, do you, would you say an anti-Semite is, and a Nazi are, is one that much worse than the other? I mean, I think anti-Semite generally is pretty damn reprehensible. And
sure.
So, you know, Nazi, I mean, what does that, you know what I mean? Like, it's a matter.
Absolutely.
It's a matter. I mean, I don't know if there are degrees of badness there, or a white supremacist, or a racist, or a bigot, or, you know, like, all of these things are very bad.
And I think racist is particularly problematic because there are people I would definitely call a racist.
Mm-hmm.
That they themselves have said to my face, I am not a racist, I'm just prejudiced against some people.
Bullshit.
And to me, there is no difference.
Yeah.
But that person, I don't believes that in a void. And I know for a fact that person doesn't believe that in a void. So it would be impossible. Okay, say that I put that in a story. This individual, a racist, said the following. That person, I think, would have an absolutely valid point coming to my news organization or my editor and saying, that's not accurate. I am not a racist. I'm prejudiced. Like, again, I am not defending that. I think it's pass fail. Either you're racist or you're not. But I could see someone making that case for that. And if they themselves believe it, then how can we say otherwise? This is getting deeply philosophical here, but I think it's important because of the fever pitch volume. Every time someone is not identified as a Nazi or a racist or a sexist or whatever, social media chorus jumps in with like, the media said, bleh, won't call him a Nazi. Like, it is fundamentally and philosophically complex to be able to say with absolute, unassailable accuracy, Nazi.
I agree.
Even if you personally believe it.
Yeah.
Even if someone walked up to my face and said, hey, Jew, I think you should be dead. I still, you know what I mean? Like, I think one thing to do, right, like hedging it is one way. I don't like that either. The other way is to just like, here are the facts and let the court of public opinion call them whatever they want.
Yeah, sure.
Like a good quote saying something about hating Jews will pretty much make your point anyway.
Yeah.
But I think it's a tricky one.
Yeah, I think I totally agree on the Nazi thing. That's really tricky. But I personally feel like newspapers, including my own, are a little too overly cautious when it comes to flat out saying somebody is a racist or an anti-Semite or whatever. Because there are, not very often, but there are certainly times when you can say, you know, so-and-so is a racist. Or at least, like, you know, I think, for example, with the president, I think I have said this in columns. I think you can, of course, columns are different than news stories, but, you know, I think you can absolutely say that the president has said racist things. You know, do you want to say,
well, and that's an interesting distinction, right? Though, right?
So, like,
so and so had made a racist remark at an event versus so and so, a racist. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I've made clear where I stand on Trump and being a racist.
I don't think you have. Where do you feel? How do you feel about Trump?
Oh yeah, I think he's a racist.
Just kidding.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking.
I'm pretty clear on you thinking Trump is a racist. Don't worry.
I don't know why. I was like,
Wait, what? But, no, have I not been on the record with this?
Did I miss something? But yeah, it's hard. It's complex. And again, people don't, you know, people blame the media. And this is where you get into it's the left and the right. Everybody's like, why don't you say this? Or me, me. And it's like, well, because, I mean, it's hard. And you don't want to treat people unfairly. When you know, and that's a big hammer to swing. I mean,
yes,
you know, calling somebody a racist flat out is no small statement. So,
right, and in my mind, there is I'm thinking and talking at the same time, which is always dangerous. But it seems like a racist speaks to a body of work,
right? Yes.
Versus Like, if somebody made what appears to be a racist remark, like, what is the context? Because, like, just last week we were talking about how it's only a matter of time before someone takes something we've said when we're quoting somebody or right, doing a yeah. bit, takes it, like, just a minute ago, I was being that person and was like, I'm not racist, I'm prejudiced. Like, right. if someone took that and said, Amy Guth said, I'm not racist, I'm prejudiced. I'm like, did you say that? Yes, but I was playing the part of a racist. So, right. in our racist theater that yes. we were doing, right? So, like... in my mind, there is a difference. A series of racist remarks and beliefs and actions add up to being a racist. Yeah. And oh my God! And Siri, Siri just took that and ran with it. Siri was like, "I've found some racist remarks because I said seriously or something."
That's funny. I'm glad she didn't start screaming racist remarks.
Great. Then you got Siri saying honky too.
The day I found my iPhone was racist. A think piece.
Siri started throwing racial slurs out during the podcast. That was a thing that occurred. Lord. Anyway, it's complex.
It's very complex. And people need to be understanding of that, too. I hate it when people jump on the media. Not people jump on...
Members of the media.
Members of the media. Sorry. Overset sort of thing. Because, yeah, it's harder than it seems. It's easy to get on Twitter and shout, you're a racist. You know, it's harder to really back
or say that we don't, that we're spineless.
Yeah. I was called a racist today.
You were?
Yeah, because I wrote the thing about the governors both being super rich white guys.
Did them a super rich white guy call you a racist?
No, it was just some dumbass, but I mean, you know.
Was it a white guy?
I imagine.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, whatever. I get that sometimes. I get emails from racists calling me a race traitor.
Oh my God.
You know, so it's like,
oh my God.
What is this? That's like a whole other level of weird that I can't.
It just got like meta.
Right. Anyway. Oof. But yeah, it's tricky. Anyway, we got to be careful.
That's what we're wrestling with today. Well, we're out of time already.
Jeezums.
What?
Jeezums.
Is that a chip? What is that?
Jeezums. A new chip.
It's like Cheeto. It's like the generic Cheeto.
Right, yeah.
We've lost our minds today. We're under caffeinated. It won't happen again.
Indeed.
We'll see you next time. Don't be a jerk on Twitter and try not to do any Nazi-like actions so that we don't have to decide whether or not you're a Nazi. Exactly. How about that?
Yes.
Ugh, this is exhausting. These times are exhausting. All right, see you next time on Guth and Hupke on Politics.